God further for you, half-orc. There was no malice in Zirko's response, just a grim curiosity. Only you can answer that, Jackal told him. As you say, I am ignorant of your burdens, but that does not mean I cannot help alleviate them, given the chance. The high priest stood calmly, taking in the occupants of the stable. At last, he motioned for his attendants. The pair of halflings crossed the corral, taking up position on their master's flanks. Both were female, their coarse black hair shaved short, almost to the scalp. I wonder, Jackal, Zirko mused, are you willing to receive my god's help without first knowing the full cost? I tell you now, standing with us against the centaurs shall not be all the master-slave demands. Fetching breathed in sharply, preparing to cast a barb, but Jackal turned and silenced her with a look. He looked Zirko dead in the eyes. If it means my arm whole again, he declared, then yes. Oh, hells, Oates groaned. Very well, Zirko said. He turned and retrieved several objects from his attendants. They were three ceramic jars, the largest barely the size of a proper cup. The halfling priest set them upon the ground in front of Jackal, in descending order of size. Fill this with your urine, Zirko instructed, pointing to the largest vessel. The next with blood, and the last with your seed. Jackal frowned, but it was Oates who voiced the question. Is that the payment? No, Zirko replied simply, still watching Jackal. But it's required? Jackal asked. The little man flashed a white smile. Oh, yes. The hardest of these to give says a great deal about a man, yes? Without further comment, Zirko left the stable and headed across the corral. His attendants stayed behind, waiting expectantly. Shit. Jackal swore under his breath as he stood. Turning around, he found Fetching standing very close. She wore a small smile beneath her hungry eyes. I figure, she said throatily, you can manage the first jar on your own, but I would be willing to help with the other. She took his good hand in her own and began guiding it to one of the full breasts beneath her linen shirt. Not caring that the others were watching, Jackal opened his fingers eagerly. He grunted as pain sliced down his palm and snatched his hand back. Fetching had moved so fast, he had not even seen her draw the knife. There you are, she said, laughing freely. No need to thank me. Oates was chuckling, too. Clenching his fist and his teeth, Jackal glared at both of them.
Better not waste it, brother, Oates advised, eyeballing the jars.
Squatting down, Jackal squeezed blood from the wound into the middle vessel. He could feel his pulse throbbing in his hand as the crimson flow quickly filled the jar. Crafty offered him a bandage, and Jackal began wrapping his lacerated palm.
Two bad hands is going to make pissing a challenge, Oates offered sympathetically. And that last jar a damn nightmare.
Jackal gave Fetch a withering look. You really are a cunt sometimes. Shit, Jack, she replied, looking genuinely guilty. I didn't think about that. When no pardon was forthcoming, and all she continued to receive were condemning stares, Fetching shrugged deeply and raised her voice. Sorry? What the fuck do I know about milking a cock? I don't think about it all the time like you two. Perhaps we should give friend Jackal some peace, Crafty suggested, motioning toward the quickly darkening corral. The wizard coaxed the group out of the stable, giving the tine girl a kindly smile as she passed. Jackal tried not to look at her, out of some boyish fear that she might have understood why he was being left alone. Zirko's attendants removed themselves farther as well, but he noticed they continued to face the stable. Despite a youth spent throttling his cod, Jackal struggled. His injuries hindered him, of course, but the greatest difficulty resided in his mind. He conjured the feel of Delia on his lap in the bathhouse, but the initial swell quickly receded. Jackal found himself wishing he had joined Oates and spying on the she-elf bathing. He imagined what he had missed, but that brought up thoughts of fetching and his newly sliced hand, which made him recall her kicking his nuts. This withered him almost completely. Fortunately, the memory also dredged up his interrupted encounter with Sissy, her buttocks bared atop a barrel, and her desire for roughness. In his mind's eye, he did everything Fetch had prevented, his fantasy going further than even Sissy might have allowed. When the third jar was out of the way, pissing in the biggest became only a matter of time. The halflings took the vessels away, to what purpose Jackal did not know and tried not to dwell upon. Oates and Fetching were still amused by the whole ordeal, but their grins and jibes masked a deeper concern for what unknown bargain Jackal had just struck. Crafty, however, remained worryingly blank. As night fell fully and the moon rose higher, there was no sign of Zirko or any of his servants. A trio of Unyar women brought food and water, but otherwise the corral became an unguarded cage. Eventually, Oates joined Jackal at the fence, where he had taken up a torturous vigil of Strava's star-banishing shadow. "Fetch and I are gonna sleep," the thrice said quietly. "Crafty's got the point ear." "Good." It was all Jackal could think to answer. He waited, knowing his friend had more to say. "We have to return to the kiln tomorrow, Jack. Gotta let the hoof know we're all still alive." "Yeah," Jackal agreed slowly. "At sunrise, you and Fetching go. Crafty and I will follow with the girl when we can." "You really going to bring her back? What's the chief going to do when he sees?" "Exactly," Jackal said. "What? His reaction will tell us something, hopefully enough."
"And if his reaction is to kill her, and you?"
Jackal had been thinking on that. "He doesn't have to know what we suspect. Hells, all he'll know for certain is what we tell him. Sludge Man tried to kill us when asked about the horse. We put him down and rescued his elf slave. Whatever more there is will be for him to betray. We just have to hope he does, and we are quick enough to take advantage." A rumbling sigh poured out of Oates. Briefly, he pawed the back of Jackal's head, giving it an affectionately rough shake, before walking back to the stable. Hearth trotted over, rooting around noisily before settling down in the dust. Soon the hog was grunting and snuffling in his sleep. Jackal sank down to the ground, exhausted to the point of feeling sick. His broken arm had been completely taken over by the frightening numbness. Concentrating on the dull, dead feeling made Jackal nauseous, so he tried to put it out of mind. He lay back on hearth, his head and shoulders resting against the hog's barrel of a belly. The rhythm of the barbarian's breathing quickly pulled Jackal's eyelids down.
Chapter 12. Jackal awoke coughing. The air was musty, heavy with a mixture of unpleasant odors. Hearth must have moved on in the night, for Jackal was flat on his back. Blinking against the lingering confusion of sleep, he sat up, nearly gagging on the morass sinking into his lungs. The stench of smoke was strongest, with foul undercurrents of rust and decaying leather. Zirko stood before him.
"You have grown strong, Jackal of the Grey Bastards."
It was damn dark, the sky devoid of moon and stars. The High Priest was visible only because of the torch in his hand.
"You remain companioned with a thrice-blood in that singular female," Zirko continued. "Yet now you add a wizard and an elf-slave to your followers. Some would call that madness."
Squinting against the glare of the torch and his own befuddlement, Jackal stood. Zirko turned, and his light revealed the stone arch of a low tunnel just behind him. Jackal recoiled, as his perception was violently altered. He had thought himself in the corral, under the vast openness of the sky, yet now he realized he was underground, hemmed in by rank dirt and threatening rocks. The oppressive air, allied with the reek of a thousand old graves, began to drown him. Spitting and coughing, fighting not to retch, fighting to breathe, Jackal struggled amidst the undeniable leaden blackness. Zirko's voice reached through the panic.
There were many who deemed Bellico mad when he rode out to conquer his neighbors, with only 2 brothers, 14 men, and 1 dwarfish slave.
Where?
Jackal sputtered, before succumbing to dry heaves.
In the end, none dared call him madman. Warlord, scourge, god. These were the words now on the tongues of the world.
Snarling furiously against his own weakness, Jackal forced his body to obey.
Where have you brought me? He demanded.
Come. Zirko gestured toward the tunnel. Allow me to show you.
Clammy with sweat, but breathing easier, Jackal took a step toward the halfling. Zirko waited patiently until he was within a few steps, then entered the yawning mouth. Jackal had to duck to follow. The dragging torchlight shone raw inside the narrow throat. Timber and mortared stone held the earth at bay, though the struggle was an old one, and small avalanches of dry soil fell through fissures in the brickwork. They walked in silence for a long time, and Jackal's legs began to burn from the effort of propelling him while holding a squat. Numerous passages intersected with theirs, sinister gullets of shadow opening irregularly from left and right. Zirko made several turns, and Jackal soon despaired of ever finding his way back to the sky. Occasionally, they passed other halflings in the side tunnels, each halting and bowing their head as Zirko went by. Every one bore a torch and some other oddment, held carefully, reverently. Jackal noted weapons and armor ridden with rust or verdigris, some little more than misshapen lumps. Several held silken bags or small coffers, their contents a mystery. Most, however, carried bones. After witnessing the 4th halfling cradling a skull to his breast, Jackal avoided looking into the other tunnels and focused on Zirko's back. At last, they emerged into a roughly circular chamber. The ceiling was domed, allowing Jackal to stand upright. The chamber might have once been quite sizable, but heaps of refuse piled against the curved wall intruded far onto the floor, choking the space. Treasure lay alongside trash, broken pottery scattered amidst golden urns, dry rotted saddles perched atop gaping chests of coins, broken bows lying on burst sacks of gems. Atop it all was a grubby film of dust and patina and smelly age. In the center of the spoiling hoard lay an angled stone bier supporting the skeleton of a man. Fully dressed in moldering armor and surrounded by pitted weapons, the reclining bones faced the tunnel. Zirko picked his way through the debris and stood next to the bier, holding his torch aloft to better bathe the remains in flickering light.
This was Atukan, the halfling said, his voice hushed with respect. One of the original 14 men with the courage to join Bellico.
Jackal lingered at the mouth of the tunnel and said nothing.
Your humors tell me that you share much with Atukan, Jackal,
Zirko went on.
Courage, ambition, a thoughtless confidence that some would call foolishness. It will be a good match. I pray you are worthy of it.
Worthy of what? Jackal ventured. Ignoring the question, Zirko motioned at the contents of the tomb with a languid finger.
Do you know how long it took my people to find all this? How many halfling pilgrims wandered the world, tirelessly seeking the objects Atukan possessed in life? How many returned empty-handed, their faith in splinters? How many did not return at all?
Jackal shook his head. Zirko smiled.
No, and nor do you care. Why would you?
Carefully, the halfling reached toward the bier with his free hand, winding his fingers beneath the skeleton's left vambrace, and lifted the forearm bones free.
Perhaps, Zirko said, holding the bones close to his chest. It is enough to say that your request requires something most precious.
I told you I was willing to pay the price, Jackal declared.
Because you do not know what it is. You find charging into unknown danger simple, perhaps even comforting. But I wonder, would you be so bold staring it full in the face?
Jackal felt his patience unraveling. You asked if I would make a blind bargain, and I agreed. Now you question my grit. Heal me or don't, priest, but spare me your insights into my nature.
Zirko took a deep breath.
Did you know that the first Zirko was born in the south? In Dargest, that the orcs now claim?
Jackal had heard something of the sort, but did not remember it until now. He was growing tired of questions, and was in no mood to voice an answer. The high priest did not appear to expect one.
Before he was taken by slavers and sold to the Imperium, the halfling related, Zirko was the stunted son of a lion hunter. His father traded him to the flesh markets, when it was obvious he would never grow taller than a boy. Years later, he was given to a minor steplands chieftain in tribute for some small service. He would eventually help that chieftain attain godhood. Yet still, what he wanted most was to return to the welts of his childhood. When at last he did return, Zirko was the patriarch of his own tribe, the leader of the Onyar horsemen, and prophet of the god worshipped by both man and halfling. His former people, however, would never see his splendor. During Zirko's long years as a slave, the orcs had overrun his homeland. Calling upon the master slave, Zirko bade the god destroy the slaughterers of his birth kin, but Belliko, fresh in his divinity, could not combat the ancient powers fed by the sacrificial fires of the orcs. Zirko was forced to flee north, across the Gut, and came here to Ulwandulas. During the journey, he commanded the Unyars to fill their helmets with dirt and drag stones upon their shields, so that he could build Strava from the soul of his home.
Jackal realized too late that he was grinning.
Is something amusing? Zirko asked mildly.
No, Jackal told him. Sorry. Crafty had the story wrong. I was looking forward to gloating.
Zirko chuckled.
To sorcerers, all knowledge is a weapon. In their haste to fill their quiver, they often do not look to see if the shafts are straight.
So why tell me?
In order for you to understand the price, Zirko replied, his smile vanishing. I have no desire for trickery. I simply could not speak terms in front of your companions. Your hoof sister was likely to try and kill me were she to hear the cost of my help.
Name it then.
There are two prices. The one you must pay to me, you already know. The second is due to mighty Belliko.
Speak, priest!
For me, You must stand with us here at Strava, every Betrayer Moon. Do you agree? Done.
Zirko fixed him with a dubious squint.
You answer quickly, Jackal. I thought loyalty to one's hoof was absolute. You would abandon your brothers on the night they would likely need you most?
They are bastards, Jackal said. They can endure a few nights without me.
But can you endure a life without them?
Zirko asked quietly.
Jackal hesitated. Something in the halfling's voice made his guts go cold. The little black man looked around slowly, calmly taking in the uncountable litter of relics.
My namesake never relinquished his desire for vengeance. After long years, Zirko had a revelation. As a god, Belliko could not contend with the orcs, but as a man, there was no army that he could not defeat. So, my pilgrims dedicate their lives to collecting the vestiges of Belliko's host, bringing them all here to his temple. When he witnesses the power of his mortal life assembled once more, he will return to flesh and bring his men back from death. Belliko will ride again and spill orc blood until there is none left to stain the world.
Jackal saw the disturbing passion of belief spread throughout Zirko's entire body as he spoke. His short stature no longer mattered. At the center of his own zeal, the halfling was a formidable, controlled storm. Had he been surrounded by Fix, the priest would have cut them all down with ease, Jackal had no doubt. The thought of 100 temples in his Sparta was suddenly not so difficult to imagine, if this was what faith in the faceless could do to even the smallest man. Holding the bones out at arm's length, Zirko approached.
I will give you the arm of Atukan. But you must pledge, here, beneath Holy Strava, that if the great god Belliko returns while you still breathe, you will ride beside him in place of the champion whose bones made you whole. You must swear to renounce all loyalties and serve only the whim of the master slave. This is the price demanded by my god.
Jackal took a long time to answer, though he no longer felt any reluctance. This was a bargain that would never need to be honored. Gods were fables, and men did not return from death. But Jackal took a moment to ensure his relief did not show. It was clear that Zirko believed what he said, but even lost inside his god's fervor, the priest was no fool. Too quick an answer might tip him off to Jackal's dubiety.
I swear, Jackal said solemnly, that if Belliko returns during my life, I will serve him.
Zirko's torch began to gutter. In the flickering, failing light, Jackal saw the halfling open his hand and allow the forearm bones to fall to the floor of the tomb. They were both snapped in two. Blackness spilled down from the dome, charging the weakened flame and snuffing it out. Jackal was blind. And then he opened his eyes. The morning sky was newborn, still jaundiced before a proper sunrise. Hearth was warm and bristly against Jackal's skin. Groggy and stiff, he rolled and pushed himself up off the ground. Hearth went right on sleeping, only kicking a little at the disturbance. Looking across the corral, Jackal saw Fetching and Oats already saddling their barbarians. It looked like Crafty and the Tyne girl were still asleep. Jackal was halfway across the corral when he stopped, realizing what he had done. Out of old habit, he had placed both hands on the ground when he got up, pressing his full weight upward. Holding up his left arm, Jackal peered at it, flexing his fingers. There was no pain,
no awful swelling or aching pressure, no nauseating numbness. The damn thing felt fine. Unwrapping the splint, Jackal scrutinized his arm further. His flesh was a little sour-smelling from sweating under the bindings, but otherwise normal. Shaking his hand rapidly at his side as he walked, Jackal came up behind Oates.
"We're riding out," the brute said, too busy with Ugfuck to turn around.
"We're all going," Jackal said. Oates turned slowly, frowning, and Fetching looked up from her hog. Jackal raised his arm, showing them the back of his hand, and wiggled his fingers.
"Well, that's done," Fetching muttered, and went back to securing her javelins.
Oates's face went slack with relief and puzzlement.
What did he ask you for?"
"Nothing," Jackal replied. "Going to be spending every betrayer here, like he said."
"Huh," Oates grunted. "Claymaster's going to piss venom."
"Let's go home," Jackal said, ignoring the last remark and clapping the thrice on the shoulder. He whistled shrilly across the corral, waking Hearth. The hog clambered to his hooves and trotted over. Jackal wasted no time getting him saddled. Crafty came and stood by, just as he was giving the girth strap a final tug.
"So," the wizard said, "I gather a pact has been made?"
Jackal gave him a grin. "As solid as the one between you and me. Oh, and you were wrong about the helms full of dirt. It wasn't Bellico who ordered the Unyars to do that. It was Zirko."
"Well, he would know," Crafty replied with airy amusement. "He was there."
Jackal threw out a small laugh. "The first Zirko was there."
"As you say,"
Crafty returned, already walking toward his barbarian. "Fat ass doesn't like to be wrong," Jackal told Hearth, still chuckling. Looking up, he found the elf girl waiting within the stable, watching the preparations. Fetch's spare riding leathers were too big for her, cinched about the waist with a length of dirty rope. The shirt was not so bad, though the elf filled it out far less than its owner. Jackal found himself noticing her hair. She must have allowed Fetch to cut it at the river, too foul from the swamp to properly clean. Injury and a worried mind had kept Jackal from noticing before, but now he was struck with the vibrant color, so black it was nearly blue. The way Fetching's knife had hacked it to just below the elf's jaw gave her a ragged, wild appearance. Realizing he was staring, Jackal turned away and mounted up. "Oates," he called, "you got the point ear." Once the tine was up on Ugfuck's back, they all rode out of the corral, finding a troop of horsemen waiting for them. Zirko was with them, astride an ass. Jackal and the others reined up.
"The Unyars will see you safely away," the priest told them.
"We thank you," Jackal replied, dipping his chin respectfully. As the horsemen began escorting the hogs away, Zirko raised his hand toward Jackal.
"One last word before you go."
The troop did not stop, making it clear that the priest wanted time alone. Oates and Fetching stalled. "Go on," Jackal told them. "I'll catch up." Zirko waited until all the riders were out of earshot before speaking.
"I trust I will see you again."
"The Betrayer Moon," Jackal said. "So long as you warn of its coming, I will be here."
"Good," the priest replied. "Stravad will be the safer for it. Take this, too."
From a pouch at his belt, Zirko produced a leather packet and tossed it to Jackal. "Tea leaves?" Jackal asked, sniffing the contents.
"They will help with the nausea."
"I don't feel sick."
"Not for you," Zirko said. "For your elf woman. Another month, and she will need those brewed each morning."
Jackal felt his jaw go slack. "You think she's pregnant?"
"I know what she does not. Not yet."
"Fucking sludge man," Jackal snarled. Zirko clicked his tongue.
I am afraid her time is less than 7 moons away. That is not the seed of any man in her belly.
That filthy bog-trotter is no man.
Jackal trailed off, his brain coming to grips with what the halfling just said.
7 months? You mean...
Zirko dipped his eyes in response. Jackal ran his newly healed hand through his hair. The poor girl was carrying a half-orc.
Chapter 13 Hobnail was the first bastard they saw after riding through the kiln's tunnel. He didn't raise his stockbow or an alarm, nor call for the slopheads to put Jackal in chains. His voice contained relief rather than rancor.
"Fuck all the hells,"
he swore, jogging over to help wrangle their hogs.
"We figured you all for dead. Where's Oates?"
Jackal managed not to cast a surprised look at Fetching. They'd been preparing for a confrontation, not an easy welcome. Hobnail took his hesitation for grave news.
"Shit. Don't tell me he's..."
"Oates is well," Jackal cut in, swinging down from the saddle. "He's back at Winsome. Long overdue visit with his mother." It was the truth. Oates hadn't been happy about it, but the Tyne girl had to be left somewhere, and Jackal could think of no better place than Beryl's. He was not about to bring her into the kiln, not yet, and he couldn't leave her completely unguarded. That meant Oates got to play watchdog while being badgered and overfed.
"Well, you are long overdue a report to the chief," Hobnail told him, holding steady to one of Harth's swine yankers. "He was a cunt hair away from sending the hoof looking for you."
Jackal noticed that Hob's gaze drifted to Crafty while he spoke. So, the Claymaster was worried about his potential wizard, likely the source of all the forbearance. Whatever the cause, Jackal wasn't going to waste the chance.
"Where's Mead?" he asked, hoping to all hells he wasn't out on patrol.
"Mucking about with the ovens, I think," Hob replied, looking perplexed. "You not hear me? Chief wants a word."
"I heard," Jackal said. He nodded to Fetching, and she hurried off toward the kiln's central keep. Mead spoke the elf tongue. The notion was for Fetch to bring him to Winsome, to see if he could coax the Tyne into talking, give them any clues toward the chief's hand in her capture. Mead had carried a stiff cod for Fetching ever since he was a slophead, so he wouldn't need much convincing to help. If he could provide a few more answers before Jackal went to the Claymaster, all the better. Hobnail leaned in and grabbed Jackal around the elbow.
"You going to tell me what the fuck is happening?"
Though not a thrice, Hob was big and wore a beard that he dyed red with rose madder. He stuck his face close, eyeballing Jackal with a burning look. Refusing to be cowed, Jackal grinned.
"You'll find out at table, Hob, along with everyone else."
Hobnail released his hold, his face going slightly slack.
"You're calling us together?"
Jackal gave Hob's shoulder a reassuring thump. The larger mongrel was off balance with confusion. Best to keep him that way. Jackal kept his own questions coming.
"Any brothers out riding?" Hobnail shook his head. "Only a few slops."
That was disappointing, but Jackal tried not to show it. He had been hoping at least one of the bastards was ranging. There could be no table meet unless all the sworn members of the Hoof were present. Now, any stalling that could be achieved would fall on Oates, Fetch, and Mead, but the Claymaster could order them to return from Winsome. And that's precisely what the plague-ridden tyrant would do as soon as he learned they were gone. Fortunately, Jackal had a shiny trinket to dangle. By now, a group of slopheads had converged on the hogs, bringing skins full of water and wine to offer to the returning riders. Jackal accepted one, made sure it was water, and took a long pull. He waited until the slops were making enough of a fuss before giving Crafty a pointed look. The wizard gave the barest hint of a grin and sidled up next to Hobnail.
I would like to offer apologies to your claymaster for taking so unexpected a leave,
Crafty said.
Would you take me to him?
Sure, Hob said, clearly uncomfortable addressing the stranger. He gave Jackal an almost apologetic look.
Chief is gonna want to talk to you, too.
Just going to see to my hog first, Jackal told him, motioning at the slops. Can't damn well leave him with these twat lips.
Don't I know, Hobnail agreed, and Mock lunged at one of the hopefuls, causing the youth to flinch. See you in a small while, Jack.
As Hob led Crafty away across the yard, Jackal heard the wizard chatting amiably.
Hobnail? So named because you are blunt, yet keep your feet in difficult situations? Or perhaps it is simply the shape of your penis which gives rise to the name.
Grinning, Jackal hurried in the opposite direction, leaving Hearth in care of the slop heads. Despite his prejudices, he didn't have time to waste in the stables. On his way to the supply hall, he saw Fetching and Mead riding toward the gatehouse tunnel. Good. They would be in Winsome soon. Of course, it all hinged on the Time Girl actually talking, but that was out of Jackal's hands. Mead was younger and soft-featured for a half-orc. The bastards had always given him shit for wearing his hair in the Time fashion, but perhaps today that affectation would prove useful, help the Pointier to trust. She best start getting used to half-breeds, if Zirko's prediction were true. Jackal hadn't told anyone about the halfling's revelation. If the elf truly was pregnant, and if she was carrying a fix get, that knowledge would only twist things into more of a viper's nest than they already were. Besides, if Zirko was correct about the girl not knowing, the last thing she needed was to hear it from a bunch of half-orcs she viewed as her captors. Jackal didn't know what would become of her, no matter which way his plan went. Even sitting in the chief's seat, he could not prevent her from taking her own life. Likely he would have to bargain her back to the Tynes to make amends. He was using her, same as the unknown orc that raped her, same as the Sludge Man. It wasn't right, but neither was ending the lives of naked, pleading men in chains. All of these evils had been handed to him. The only way to end it was to snatch everything away from the one that gave them over. There was no doubt that Crafty would be able to keep the Claymaster preoccupied, especially if the chief's inevitable questions and aggravation inadvertently caused the wizard to suddenly become offended, forcing a scramble of apologies and fawning to ensure the hoof did not lose its prospects for sorcery. Jackal's grin widened as he entered the supply hall.
"Look who finally comes slithering back," Grocer droned from his usual place behind the counter. "Got the birdcage you stole?"
"Sorry, the Sludge Man was smitten with it. Gave it to him as a gift." Grocer blew out a disgusted blast of air.
"Damn that bog fucker! I had that cage for 22 years. Old Creep made it, back before the Fix split his skull. And you just go and give it away!"
"Grocer," Jackal cut the curmudgeon off, "who gives a shit?" The old mongrel's face curdled, and he glowered.
"Did you at least bring the Claymaster back his sand-sucking spellweaver?"
"Uhad Ulbadir Tarukultani,"
Jackal said easily. Grocer's wrinkles soured further.
"Damn foreign-sounding gibberish."
"Just call him Crafty," Jackal said impatiently. "Yes, he's here. I need new gear. Full kit, except for brigand and javelins." The quartermaster really got offended now.
"You trade everything with some whore? Serves you right, you being the one who caused us to have to pay for cunny now."
"Like you have any quick left in your shriveled cock, old man. So miserly, you couldn't bear to part with your spend, even if you could get hard." Jackal was practiced at giving as good as he got, and made sure to put just enough levity in his insults to push back without offending. Grocer chuckled darkly.
"Why do you think I piss in the beer? Can't stand to waste it. and you young bucks don't notice the taste.
We notice. We just like it. Now get me a fucking thrum and a thick slicer. I felt naked for days.
Sliding off his stool, Grocer skulked to the back to gather the gear. Neither he nor Hobnail had said anything about Jackal being gone without orders. Both had displayed curiosity and frustration at his absence, not anger. And Jackal reckoned he knew why. The Claymaster had not revealed one of his riders left without his consent. To do so would be to admit his hold on the hoof was slipping, which meant Jackal's footing was stronger than he dared hope.
"Here," Grocer said begrudgingly when he returned, laying a tulwar, stockbow, two daggers, and a full quiver on the counter. "That's the last you get from me this year, so better keep hold of them."
Jackal laughed off the empty threat as he buckled the weapons on. Whatever happened now, at least he would be armed.
"Anything interesting happen while I was away?"
"Fix made a run at Black Knuckle," Grocer replied. "The Cauldron Brotherhood saw them off proper, but they lost one of their own and four barbarians."
"Nothing in our lot?"
Grocer huffed derisively.
"Well, Rounth claimed he saw a Tyne sniffing around while he was on patrol, but his mouth's as full of shit as his skull."
Jackal froze for half a heartbeat. He tried to play it off as a momentary difficulty with his sword scabbard, but Grocer was quicker than Hob and missed nothing.
"Unless you know something I don't," the old mongrel said.
Securing his tulwar, Jackal looked up. "Just be ready to come to table." Not waiting for Grocer's reaction, Jackal shouldered the new stockbow and left the supply hall. The possible presence of a Tyne on the lot changed everything. He grabbed the first slophead he saw and asked after Rounth. When the youth pointed at the bunkhouse, Jackal took off running. This was why he needed time to catch up, to figure out, to make sure he went to the table meet with as few blinders as possible. The moment Jackal entered the dim building, it was clear from the grunts and moans, Rounth was not sleeping. Each bastard had his own chamber, and though the stucco walls were thick, the plank doors were thin. Not that Rounth bothered to close his door. Jackal leaned around the jamb and immediately clenched his eyes with mild distaste. He was hoping to catch Thistle in a pleasing and compromising position, but he was served a healthy view of Rounth's pumping backside, replete with sweat.
"You could plant the flag of his Spartha in the crack of your ass, Rounth," Jackal declared.
"That you, Jack?"
Rounth asked, not bothering to miss a stroke. Thankfully, Thistle had a bit more self-respect, fussing and pushing at her single-minded lover until he ceased his plowing. With a heavy, exasperated breath, Rounth disengaged his namesake and sat back on his heels upon the creaking bed. He turned to face the door, breathing through his mouth.
"Glad you're back. You're still pretty. Now go away."
Jackal tilted his head to the side so he could give Thistle a wink.
"I'm not the pretty one here."
"Go charm someone else, Jack," the woman said.
She managed to suppress her smile, but could do nothing about the blush. Thistle was a heavier woman, but one of the prettiest frails Jackal had seen, and blonde, which was rare in the lots.
"Why," he teased, "you're already stripped down and in bed. The hard work is done."
"I'm right here,"
Rounth complained, pushing some of the strewn covers at Thistle so she could cover up. The woman made an effort, but as the hoof loved to say, she had the largest breasts in Ulwundulas. She served as wet nurse for Beryl's orphans and was amply equipped for her duties. Rounth had taken to her the moment she came to Winsome. He liked larger women, which was a mercy, considering his famed proportions. Jackal was fond of Thistle. Not many human women would agree to feed a gaggle of half-orc infants from their own body.
"Darlin'," Jackal said, "would you mind giving me and the battering ram here a moment?" With a final, resigned exhalation, Rounth nodded at Thistle. Just wait in the commons.
No, Jackal chided, seizing Rounth's arm and dragging him off the bed. She can stay, and we will go. What's the matter with you?
Unprepared for the sudden tug, Rounth lost his balance and fell off the bed in an awkward, naked tumble. Jackal kept hold and headed out the door. Cursing, Rounth managed to get his feet under him and careened into the corridor. Jackal let go just long enough to put him in a headlock, and they scuffled until reaching the bunkhouse common room. Rounth struggled free and stepped back, the smile on his face chasing away most of the irritation of having his fun interrupted. Rounth was short for a half-orc, but his nearly black skin, sizable tusks, and ghastly wide cock hinted at a thrice somewhere in the female line.
"What is it, Jackal? And it better be good."
Rounth did not bother to cover up, just stood, unmindful of his erection.
"I need to know about the time you saw."
"That couldn't have waited? Hells, it was one damn elf."
"And you're sure?"
"I don't know anything else that rides a harrow stag."
With a shake of his head, Rounth started to head back to the corridor. Jackal put a hand on the shorter half-orc's chest.
"I need to know about it. It's important."
It was his tone, more than his hand, that stopped Rounth.
"Sure, Jackal," he said, stepping back again. "I was riding near Gulliat Wash. Chief had us out solo, on account of you, Fetch, and Oates being gone. I stopped to water my hog, and as I was mounting back up, I saw it on the other bank, higher up the gully. Damn big stag with those shimmering damn antlers, and there was a rider, right on its back. Fucker was watching me. I called out, demanded what he was doing on our lot, and started riding across the water. By the time I got to the other bank, there was no sight of him. But the tracks were there, right where he was waiting. I know, you think I was heat-sick or some shit, but—"
"No," Jackal interrupted. "No, I believe you. When was this?"
Rounth's eyes looked at the ceiling as he thought.
2 days ago? It's one rider, Jack. Nothing to worry about."
Jackal didn't say anything. One rider, not enough to worry about. That was exactly the point. One rider was not a threat and easily ignored, but more than enough to look around. The Tynes were searching for her.
"Can I get back to it now?"
Rounth asked, gesturing down the corridor.
"Yeah," Jackal replied.
Rounth was halfway back to his room when Jackal called after him.
"I need a favor."
Rounth turned around, but continued to walk backward, making a face that demanded haste.
"Give Thistle a ride back to Winsome when you're done," Jackal told him. "Tell Fetch and Oates I need to see them, right away. Ride back with them, and tell them to bring the girl."
"Girl?"
"You'll see when you get there."
Rolling his eyes as he spun on his foot, Rounth waved acknowledgement and jogged to his room. The moan started up again before Jackal could leave the bunkhouse.
Shit.
Stalling further was pointless. They could not keep the elf in Winsome. Her people were looking for her. If they were already scouting the bastard's lot long before Jackal and his companions brought her through, it was very possible a Tyne outrider had seen them coming home, and they would not have missed the elf woman riding captive on a barbarian. A lone scout would not have been foolish enough to confront four half-orcs, but if a message got back to Dogfall, there could be a raiding party of angry point-ears riding for the kiln even now. There was no choice but to reveal the Tyne girl, and be ready to adapt to what happened next. The Claymaster's head snapped up when Jackal pushed into his solar. Crafty lounged in the chair opposite the desk, a languid smile ornamenting a mouth that stopped speaking at the intrusion. It was the scene Jackal had conspired with the wizard to design during the ride from Strava. Crafty was relaxed. From beneath the bandages, the chief's eyes were heavy with thought. Jackal clenched his jaw against a gloating smile. Seeing his submerged relish, Crafty gave Jackal a tempering look.
Ah, here he is. I was just describing our shared adventure, telling how that devil the Sludge Man attacked us. There was nothing but to defend ourselves.
He spoke to no one in particular, carelessly tossing his words into the room, yet they were laden with messages. Drumming his swollen fingers on the desk, the Claymaster stewed. Finally, his far-staring eyes focused on Jackal.
"Wouldn't have needed to defend yourselves if you'd stayed out of the marsh, but this mongrel stone swell at the thought of defying me. Don't they, Jackal?"
"I was angry, Chief," Jackal replied, and meant it. "Doesn't sit well when my hoof is in danger. I couldn't let it rest. Had to know Garcia's body wasn't going to come back to bite us. But he's swamp scum now." The Claymaster nodded.
"Fucking frails. If Bermudo thought he could bring down this hoof with nothing but a lost horse and a greasy gash peddler, he has no notion of who we are. Now that we are whole, we can decide how to show him."
This wasn't the Chief Jackal expected. He had prepared for him to rage, to scream and fret uselessly. But the mongrel sitting behind the desk sounded like the old Claymaster, the one from Jackal's slop days, the formidable leader who had forged the most famed hoof in the Lotlands. The Claymaster peered up at Jackal, a sudden glint in his eyes.
"When is Oates coming back with this pointier cunny?"
Jackal nearly choked and had to prevent his eyes darting to Crafty. That was not a detail he was supposed to reveal. Jackal had wanted to ambush the Claymaster with the sight of the elf, but his snare had been sprung early. "I sent Fetching to go get them," Jackal replied, recovering quickly enough to keep from stammering. "Mead went with her. Rounth is joining them on the ride up. I heard about his Tyne sighting, figured more thrums around the girl the better."
"That why you bust in here?"
the Claymaster asked, his voice gaining a little heat.
"You think we're about to get a visit?"
Jackal's eyes drifted to the sapper pots on the shelf. "Chief, we were careful on the ride back, but if a Tyne doesn't want to be seen, it won't be. If they saw us with that girl, they know she's here." The Claymaster knuckled the desk and pushed his misshapen bulk to standing.
"Let's go."
As they followed the Claymaster out of his solar, Jackal shot a scowl at Crafty and received a wink in return. In the tap room, two slopheads watched them pass with expectant faces.
"Get up on the walls, you bare-balled whelps!"
the chief barked as he stomped past.
"I want every last slop with a spear in hand and walking the rampart. Go!"
The young half-orcs ran for the door, leaving it open behind them. The Claymaster stepped out into the heat of the yard, his tumid body, heavy with age and swaddled with wrappings, seemed to shrink under the harsh glare. Still, he did not seek shade, but stood upon the hot dust and surveyed the fortress he had built.
"Tynes will try to sneak over the walls," he muttered. "Not assault them head-on. If they come, it will be at night. That gives us some time. This girl, she trouble?"
"No," Jackal replied. "She was frightened at first. Now she's just..."
"Resigned,"
Crafty offered. The Claymaster grunted.
"Good. Then it shouldn't take more than a pair of slops to watch her."
"Perhaps that duty should be mine," Crafty said.
"Fine. We need the eyes on the walls anyway."
"What about Winsome?" Jackal asked. "Should we bring them inside?"
"They won't attack the village," came a thin voice from behind.
Jackal turned and found Hoodwink leaning against the wall of the meeting hall, right next to the door, keeping to the shadows cast by the building's roof. He had not been there a moment before, Jackal was certain. He wore a loose, deep cowl, as was his custom when forced to be in the sun. This garment,
along with Hoodwink's unnerving tendency of rarely blinking, gave rise to his hoof name. "It's not their way," he finished.
"Hood's right," the Claymaster said. "Elves aren't tars. They'll leave Winsome be."
From across the yard, Grocer was approaching, his thin, sinewy frame carrying him swiftly despite his age. From the direction of the stables, Hobnail and Polecat were coming as well. The three converged on the Claymaster.
"My slops just got pulled to the walls," Grocer said. "What we got?"
"Table meat," the Claymaster said.
His eyes were fixed across the yard, toward the unseen gatehouse tunnel blocked by the bulk of the keep. Soon, as if he willed them to appear, Oates, Mead, Fetching, and Rounth rode up. Jackal saw that Fetch bore the Tyne girl. The riders reined up in front of their waiting brethren. Hob, Grocer, and Polecat all stared at the captive elf, puzzlement manifesting in unique ways on their faces. Even Rounth still seemed a bit surprised, though he'd had the entire ride from Winsome to grow used to her presence. The chief gave no reaction. Why would he? Crafty, damn him, had thwarted any chance of catching him off guard. As for Hood, Jackal did not bother to look. A viper would flinch before that mongrel.
"Pen your barbarians," the Claymaster ordered. "Then get your asses to table. We got some lip service to attend. Fetching, give that girl over to the wizard."
Crafty approached Fetch's hog and slowly raised his arms to help the elf down. She complied, but her gaze was darting around, taking in the surrounding fortress and the new faces. Her eyes kept returning to the Claymaster, Jackal saw. Was it his deformities unnerving her, or something more? Could it be recognition? The chief returned the stare, but his gaze suggested nothing but the sizing up of a new hazard. Yet he was not alone in his scrutiny. Polecat was already stripping the Tyne girl with his eyes. Now over his initial confusion, the hatchet-faced lecher bore a naked interest, the corners of his mouth beginning to twitch upward. Jackal stepped up to Crafty, purposefully blocking Polecat's view. "Take her to the bunkhouse," he told the wizard, loud enough so the others could hear. "There's food in the commons. If she wants to sleep, my room is the second door down on the right." Up on her hog, Fetching clicked her teeth.
"Across the hall is my room, Crafty. Best for her there."
"My room," Jackal insisted, throwing a warning look up at Fetch. She grimaced at his outburst, confused and affronted. Mixed laughter bubbled in the air around them.
"Watch out, brothers," Hobnail hooted. "Our two prettiest are snapping over the new meat." "Don't fret, Jack," Polecat wheedled. "I hear elf girls hunger for quim and cock. Likely she won't mind being a bridge between you."
Rounth guffawed from his hog, and next to him, Mead was trying to swallow a snicker. A bellow from the Claymaster quickly silenced the jeers.
"Enough! I said get those hogs stabled, and I meant now. We got a long talk in front of us, so let's get to it."
The riders spurred their hogs toward the pens as Jackal's chuckling brothers ambled back into the meeting hall. He stood outside, watching Crafty lead the Tyne girl away. She took one look over her shoulder, and their eyes met before Jackal could turn away. He had saved her from the Sludge Man and brought her to the mercy of the Gray Bastards. And mercy was not something this hoof was known for. Chapter 14. There was a long silence when the Claymaster finally stopped speaking. He looked around the table, reading the reactions, the axe-scarred wood of the voting stump framing his humped back. Other than the premature revelation of the elf's rescue, it seemed Crafty had fed the chief the story they had planned. He was supposed to leave out the convalescence at Strava,
but Jackal's confidence in the wizard's discretion had withered. However, if the Claymaster knew that Jackal had bargained aid from Zirko, he said nothing about it to the Hoof. Polecat was the